Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
I'm Christine Williams.
And it is the midweek version of the Fiber Talk twice weekly podcast for people who play with needles. And I don't know if I'm going to do this every week, but got to mention male stitchers, I think, every now and then. And I learned not too long ago that our son Kevin's friend, Cole Rako, lives in the big city there, right near up the road from you. In the big city, and he is a stitcher. So,
yay.
So, and listen, so we're just going to mention him just for the fun of it. But, yep, hi, Cole. Good to have you. Yep, I don't know what he stitches. I have to ask him next time I see him if it's needlepoint or whatever. But, yep, it's a, you know, it's a job tension release at night, what I understand for him. Come home and do a little stitching and make it go away. So,
yes. It has certainly become that for me because my job has become insanely stressful. So this is basically it's needlework or a mental institution.
Yeah, opt for the needlework. Yeah, let's opt.
It's
for
so
that.
Much cheaper, right? So didn't we have a conversation where we were having a conversation with someone whose husband had told them to get a hobby and
Amy Poor last week. Yes, right.
Yeah, and so the whole thing about that was I didn't mean a hobby that was going to be expensive and life consuming and all of those things. Well, it's a hobby, but it certainly beats a mental institution because as expensive as it is as a hobby, it's cheaper than getting locked up.
Yes. As a general rule and easier on the family.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you could go the Amy Poor route and actually bring in enough money to support the habit.
I could do that. That might be a good way to do that.
Probably won't pay the rest of the bills, but buy the thread and needles. So there you have it.
Well, that's when we were doing reef keeping. That was exactly what I did. It became a zero sum.
Yep.
So all of our podcasts and lectures and all of those things were what funded the hobby for me. So I was able to do it without feeling like I was taking money away from my family.
Yes. Yep. Good tension relief. Yeah, I've got one of those jobs too. Things got a little better today, and I use it at night. Turn on the TV and sit there and stitch the tension out. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Cole Rako, you're in good company. Send us a picture of what you're working on so we can post it and show people what you do.
Yeah, that would be great. I would love that. Yeah. And then we can start chatting about where he buys supplies so I can...
Yeah, Cole, where do you get your stuff? Christine needs help. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's hard to, it's hard to buy online, I'm finding. I guess at first it was, now what it is I know what I'm missing. Because at first it was, I think threads are okay, especially when you're kitting something. And you're kitting it to, all right, this is what, like if I have a chart, okay, I know I need, all of these different DMC threads. And, I just go down the list and certain online outlets are easier to do that than others. Some of them take forever just because of the way the shopping carts are set up, and some of them are super easy. But the one that I'm finding is harder to do is fabrics. For embroidery, I can go to a local fabric shop because I embroider on silks, just regular like broadcloth. That was the word I was looking for last week and couldn't find it. Those sorts of things, and those are easy to find. But now that I've been to a shop that had a really, really good selection of needlepoint in different count sizes and different colors, now I realize, there's tremendous benefit to going to see, because it's a little bit of the color, right? Because there's a whole range of colors and there's subtle differences. But then there's also the differences between something that's a solid color and something that's aged. Something that like would be almost like a tea wash that online might look like a very subtle thing that would look like an aged piece. But then when you get it, looks like it's tie-dyed.
Yes,
and
yes.
No, until you look at that in person, right? So. Right. I think with fabrics, that's where I'm finding, I want to touch and feel and look and get that. That's where I think. And I, now knowing that, I think that I will try to that's where I'll start stashing things. When I go someplace and I see a good piece of fabric, I'll make the investment. And, you know, once I figure out sort of what my go-to size, you know, count size is,
mm-hmm.
I see a piece of fabric that I like, I'll invest in a yard or a stitcher's half yard and start stashing those things away.
Yep. So basically, your brother needs to wash the guest room sheets and Stitchery Row needs to get ready because you'll be visiting.
Perhaps. So actually, that brings up a question. So any kind of needlepoint that's charted, you can stitch on any canvas generally, right? Size-wise.
Not necessarily, no.
It's not everything. I'm not going to say everything translates, you know, from an 18 to a 40. You can't do that, right?
No.
But within reason, there's a little bit of wiggle room there, you know, that you can move from one to another.
No, so, it really depends, because most of them are on 18. If you go to Congress cloth, you might have to adjust the threads because they might be too thick.
That's fair.
Or if you go to 13, you might have to adjust the other way because it'll be too thin. So sometimes it works fine, but it's not a guarantee. No.
Okay. No. But if you're working like in the range of like in between like a 22 to a 24 to a 26 to a 28, like in that range.
You mean linen?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There are. Yeah. Then it's like if you're doing silk or DMC, then it's, you know, variation between one or two threads usually. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like, and do you feel like, and I'm asking this question, it's not a rhetorical, I'm really asking, do you feel like people make adjustments based on the size of the piece that they want and, how easily they can see the stitches and whether they want to stitch over one or over two? Because I'm finding like, and the reason it came up was in the Uffendel, the Hands Across the Sea sampler book, the Uffendel sisters, they chart it and lay it out that if you stitch it on, and I don't remember the exact ones, but it was, you know, on 26 count linen, it will be this many inches wide. And if you stitch it on up to 40 count, it'll be this many inches wide. So there is some variation there.
Right.
So I'm wondering how often people do that, how often they deviate going smaller or larger based on what they prefer. And is it a preference based on the appearance, on the ease of use?
For the for samplers, what little I've done, but if I'm doing it on linen, I'm going to do it on as high a count as I can, because I want to do one strand over two, because I don't want to have to lay threads.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, I'll go up, you know, 40 count, whatever. So I know I can do one strand over two and get good coverage and not have to lay threads. But now, you know, and that's where that, the Vonna Pfeiffer trick comes in, with the, you know, bringing up the eye of the needle. So it simplifies laying threads, because, down in the 20s, I think you end up doing for the most part two over two. And then you have to lay you should lay the threads or railroad track them or something, so they lay flat, so they cover. But like this sampler I'm working on right now, you know, I think it's on 40 count that I'm doing, and that the driving force was I want one thread over two linen threads, because I don't want to deal with laying them. I just want to stitch the X's and move on.
Mm-hmm,
and so
mm-hmm.
that's what drives me. And I remember Nicole Neville, you know, that's what she does it on the high counts, and I remember her saying that's why, is so she doesn't have to deal with two threads. Because I think two threads are okay. I don't mind it, but it's just a whole lot easier. Just put one thread through and go, rather than cutting two lengths and or doubling it up, you know, doubling it over, whatever it is you do. And then you want them to lay flat, because it makes it, especially, I think with any of them, but especially with silk, to get that sheen. You know, to lay those pairs flat, you really, I think it makes a huge difference. So
I agree. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
So the benefit then to using smaller canvas would just be that you can use a single thread, then you don't have to worry about laying the threads. Because to my eye.
Yeah, to me.
Yeah. And that makes perfect sense. When I was thinking about it, I hadn't thought about that aspect of it. Although I'm sitting here working on this, it's a very silly, frivolous cross stitch piece. But I'm looking at it and thinking, oh, and because it is, you know, two threads, and I'm looking at it thinking, wow, if I actually was careful about laying this, it'd probably look a little nicer. But I kind of don't care because I'm just doing it for fun. But the other thing is that the smaller, when you get to the smaller, the higher thread count, to me, you get a finer appearance in the sense that things look less pixelated. So in samplers, it's less important because you almost expect those to be a little chunky looking. You know, you expect the edges of a cross stitch to be a little boxy. But when you start doing cross stitch with other things, with figures or with things that are not samplers, you kind of want some kind of nice curved edges and things like that. And when you're working on a very large canvas, things start looking a little bit like Minecraft. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. And that's, you know, to me, that's on these reproduction samplers, doing them on a high count linen eliminates a lot of that. And I've never understood, because the stocking I did for Kevin that took me 30 years, not straight, mm-hmm. but, you know, off and on, it used a lot of half, three-quarter, and quarter stitch X's.
Yes.
And to round things off. And I never understand why that isn't commonplace. I imagine people just don't want to do it, so they avoid it. But it makes a big difference. So, you know, I had to learn early on that it wasn't always a full X, and it makes a big difference. So, you know, it didn't bother me. The time I got done with that piece, I'd done so many of them, I didn't really think about it. But yeah, if you do those 40 count linen 1/2, yeah, a mm-hmm. lot of that pixelation just goes away just by default. Yes,
it does. It does. And I'm calling this piece kind of silly because it is very, to my eye, very pixelated. And the way it gets away with it is that all of the, it's basically, I guess it is a sampler in a sense, but not in the traditional way. It's all of the sort of main characters of Shakespeare's plays all in one piece. Mm-hmm. So there's probably 30 different figures on this piece. So it's large. But what ends up happening is everything looks kind of pixelated. And the way that they get away with that is there's each of the figures is outlined, backstitched.
Right.
So it helps some, right? But right. It's not perfect, and it's not intended to be perfect because you have stitches that are outside of the outline, and that's the way I'm stitching it the way it's charted. So that is how it's charted. It's not a mistake. That's how it was supposed to be. So I'm calling it a little silly because it's intent, like that's how it was built. It wasn't built to be done finally.
Right,
and
I
almost, you know, so I'm doing it because, again, this is a mental health piece. It's one of those ones that we talked about that's just super easy to do. So yeah. It's just little X's on canvas and it's good to go. But as I'm doing it, I bought it at the very beginning of this pathway, because I thought it'd be easy, which it is. Now I'm wondering, like I'm looking at it and thinking, oh, this would be really fun to do as either like a real counted cross stitch on much finer cloth, like and charted well, or as a surface embroidered piece. Mm-hmm. So basically taking the design, which is probably copyright infringement now that I think about it, but if we can hypothetically think about this, doing something like this. So taking those characters and instead of doing them in this chunky way, doing them as surface embroidered pieces, how different it would look.
Yeah.
Like it would be a million times better, I think. But that said, I mean, I'm kind of enjoying it because it's kind of goofy looking.
Well, yeah. And I think that in the cross stitch world, that's kind of the ongoing debate. Using Aida cloth or using linen.
Yeah.
And, you know, you use Aida cloth, you get very nice consistent X's because there's only one place you can put the needle.
Yep.
But then mm-hmm. if you want to split it, that's impossible. Almost, it's not impossible, but it's difficult to do and do it consistently. And but then there's a lot of relaxation value in using Aida cloth and just stitching because you don't really have to, you know, it's pretty straightforward where that needle's going to go.
You're not struggling. There's nothing to struggle. It's easy peasy, but the payoff is, to me, isn't as good, because what you're looking at the end isn't this fine piece of embroidery.
Yes.
Right? So I'm kind of struggling with it, because to me, this is a piece about the doing. It's not a piece about the end. And I will look at it at the end and say, okay, I did that. And it'll be fun because it is what it is. And I kind of, you know, I like the design. It's kind of just a silly thing to have. But it's one of those, I don't know that I would buy it again, because it's not the kind of thing I would want to own. Mm-hmm. As opposed to like the stump work, I started that because I looked at the pieces and pictures, and every single one of them said, that is something I would love to own, and I would hang up and do so proudly. Like, I would want to own that as something beautiful in my home.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas this is, wow, that looks like something I would like to make, and then I'm not really sure what I'm going to do with it. Right. I'll give it to a teacher.
Right.
So,
but it's a whole thing, and you could get a bunch of cross stitchers in the room and have a pretty good never ending argument over Aida versus linen, because there are like doing this. Just my opinion, you know, just my opinion. But I think for Aida type cloth, there's a lot of good applications, you know, take towels, tea towels. I mean, there's a lot of designs that lend themselves very well to Aida cloth. In my opinion, it is an easier cloth to stitch on, and you do get very consistent results. I just prefer linen. I prefer I prefer working with linen, number one, and then I prefer the results. And I like the higher thread count ground cloth always have. I just prefer it. And, but you know, and then, you know, every now and then you'll see somebody who says, you know, I've got a stitch on 13 count, canvas with needlepoint, cause my eyes just won't deal with 18 anymore. So then, you know, that's a concession you end up making. And, you know, it becomes, cause I mean, I've seen people poo pooing Aida cloth, you know, why would you do that? Well, everybody has a different way of enjoying the hobby, and a lot of Aida cloth gets sold for a lot of things. So,
I don't think it's not about the cloth that I'm having issue with. It's more, what can you get out of it? And I think this is just a funny thing to put fine, you know, characters on Aida cloth. Is they're going to look like cartoony characters, right? There's just no two ways around this.
Yeah.
It's just this piece. It's just what it is. And I kind of like it because it is kind of cartoony and a little bit silly. And there's a little bit of irony in it that these characters end up very two-dimensional and, you know, sort of cartoony when Shakespeare's characters are anything but two-dimensional. And they're only described in words, and here they are visually, and they're less dimensional than they are in the plays. So that's a little weird, but that also kind of tickles me. I don't think that the cloth is the issue. I actually like working with the cloth because of exactly what you said. It's easy to work with. I think it would be better for other things. Like, this would be phenomenal for geometrics. It would be great for doing other types of things. You know, you could really make it sing for something else.
Yeah.
It's just not this particular thing. And also, I should, you know, also think about, well, how can I use this piece well? Well, hang it someplace where people aren't going to stand 6 inches from it.
Right. Well, that's also it. You know, if you're going to stick your nose on the piece, you know, they're all going to look pixelated. You stand at a proper distance and it goes away. Try playing around with 3/4 and 1/4 stitches on those corners and round it off.
Well,
and they are.
That's how it's stitched. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yep, they are. They are. And it is backstitched outlines. So that definitely makes it a lot more interesting to look at. So I'll take some pictures and I'll put them on Instagram. So, and like I said, it's fun. It's a fun piece to stitch. And this is I need to stitch something just to zone out for a while. And this is serving that purpose absolutely perfectly. So I'm grateful for it for that. And if it never ends up framed, I'm also okay with that too. So, I really don't mind the cloth at all. I think I can see the benefit of it, you
Yes.
know?
Yes. Yep. Definitely.
So,
Yeah. You could,
but
you could probably write a book. The psychology of stitching, I think, just fascinates me. Yeah.
it is. It is. And I think part of my sort of where I'm getting this, I guess, psychological discomfort is I'm jumping between, this stitching on Aida cloth to stump work, right? So you can't get two more opposite things, right? So I've got these
So true.
giant X's with zero coverage, right? And then I go to stump work, which is the finest, where I will spend 3 hours stitching a half inch B wing. So it's hard to, get sort of wrap my head around these two things.
Yes.
I think that's my problem.
Well, problem or a fun challenge, you know?
Yeah,
I
and
think
they're
it's
both
fun. Yeah,
circular.
I'm getting a kick out of doing this reproduction sampler and then jumping over and doing needlepoint on 18 count canvas for the Anasazi song. I'm just getting a kick out of going back and forth and
You need to, right? Because they each serve a different purpose. Like sometimes I just need to sit here and stitch, X's upon X's upon X's. And then other times I feel like, all right, no, now I'm willing to sit here and spend 3 hours working on something that I'm only going to get an inch worth of coverage
Yeah,
on. But
right.
it's going to be delicate and elegant and those sorts of things. And then
Right.
other times my mind is too frazzled from work for me to even consider being elegant. So,
Yeah, it's.
there's pros and cons to each, I
Yeah,
guess.
and that's just it. There's so many options available to us that you can really pick your poison at any time and. Do what suits you, and why not? Why not?
Different things in different times.
Yep. I'm doing this Anasazi song. I'm having a blast with it, because it. I mean, it's just a lot of Krynek. Holy smokes! So
Meh.
I get the star filled in, and then you go to the center. So it's these two concentric stars that are cross stitch stars. That are concentric, and then you fill them in with watercolors, Arabian Nights, which is one beautiful over-dyed. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh,
You
beautiful, beautiful
posted the
colors.
picture of it and it was absolutely stunning.
Oh,
That
oh.
thread is
I
beautiful.
wanted to go buy two more skeins just to have it,
Yeah,
just,
that's one
yeah.
that's definitely worth it because that is it,
Yeah.
that was it immediately caught my eye
Oh, it's
with how
beautiful.
beautiful that is.
So I fill that all in, and then there's some Krynek trim that goes with it, and so okay, that looks really nice. Then you go to the center, the dead center of the stars, and the dead center of the piece, and you do this little double X out of Krynek, and then you do this minute Jessica, absolutely minute, like I don't it was four threads on a side Jessica out of Krynek. Number eight braid. Okay,
That
so I,
sounds like fun.
yeah, it,
Yeah.
yeah, so I put that in, so I have that in the center, and then you're gonna fill in the center that is now all white into that center, Jessica, with flare, purple flare. I forget what the color is, doesn't matter, it's purple, which I've done one quarter of it, and it's oh wow. Talk about texture and color and all those things. But anyway, before I put the flare in, I posted on Needlepoint Nation just a picture of the stars all finished, and then this little Jessica with this little double cross in the middle, and said it's a Carol Lake design, and she's one of the moderators at Needlepoint Nations, and then I just said, thanks Carol for the opportunity to stitch a minute Jessica in with
Yeah.
Krynek braid. And she jumped on, and she, I forget what she said, but she said that when her husband first saw it, when she was designing it, and this design's 3 or 4 years old, that he thought it looked like a belly button. Which is, but now, but see,
Now you
now,
can't unsee that.
right, that's right, that's right. Now, yeah, this sophisticated needlepoint piece has a belly button. Thanks, Carol.
Because I'm not even looking at it, and I only looked at it briefly. And as soon as you said it, my thought was, yeah, that's
Yeah.
exactly what it is.
Thanks, Carol. So, yeah, so now my beautiful needlepoint thing that I was anxious to finish has a belly button.
Well, that's okay.
I'll have to adjust in some way.
Oh,
But it really is, it's a fun piece. And then I did not know when I started this, there are two more. It's a trio of designs. It's Anasazi's Spirit and Dream were the other two. So now, of course, okay, can I stop at just the one or do I have to have all three done? So, yeah, I don't
well, we know you're going to buy the charts and put them in your pile of charts.
know. Yeah, I probably will. I probably will because all three of them together would look pretty special. Yeah, thanks, Carol.
It's stunning that one, just what you have so far. I don't mean to gush, but it's stitched beautifully. But the yarn itself, the thread is really, really beautiful.
Oh, that Arabian Nights. Oh man, like I
It is
said,
really pretty.
I'm not kidding. I really would probably will buy a couple of skeins just to have it, just somewhere along the way to use it again.
You'll find it. You'll find a reason to
Yeah.
do it, because it yeah, and I want to look at it too, because I feel like it's going to be useful for something. Like it's because it's almost natural colors, so it would be, it's got to be useful for something.
Oh,
It will be
sure.
useful for something. There's going to be a riverbank or something that would be just the perfect thing to use to just capture the variations of something like that. It's
No, it's
beautiful.
yeah, there's lots of over dyes that are really pretty, but this one just really stands
Yeah,
out.
that's a good one.
So there we go. Yeah, having fun with it nonetheless. A lot of fun, but now I've stitched on it for 4 or 5 nights, so I think it's back to the reproduction sampler here for some, 1/2 silk. Why not? Why not? I can. Who's gonna stop me, right? Just do
That's
what I
right.
want, Take a hike, folks. So did you get your have you finished your stump work thing? Did that get done yet?
I have finished it. And I'm debating. I have one bumblebee wing that I may take out and redo. Simply because, I've always said I'm not going to ever take anything out, but this one. So the way the wings work is, it's on organza fabric, which is itself a very, very fine netting, and then you couch wire to that, and the couching is basically you're just whip stitching right around the wire until the wire is invisible, and you do that with gold sewing thread, and you can imagine, the thickness of gold sewing thread, so how many times you go around that takes forever. But then you stitch the veins of the wing
Okay,
in and
let me stop you right there. Let me stop you right there. Question for you. Do
yeah.
you do that on a straight wire and then bend it, or do you bend the wire into the shape and then do it?
In this case, what you do is you bend the wire to the pattern. So the yeah, so in some cases you can actually bend it ahead of time and then sort of pin it, like couch pin it. So take a stitch every, say, quarter inch to hold it down in the shape that you want it, and then, stitch it down either by couching it or buttonhole stitching the entire way around. And depending on which teacher you follow, some like buttonhole, some like couching it. This one, you don't do that. The way the instructor, who is Celeste Chalsani, had me do it, had the class do it, was it was couched completely. So what you do is you bend it to the shape you want it, and then you tape it down to the fabric, and then you couch it as you go, and then you just kind of pull the tape off. So it's tricky to do, because it doesn't stick very well, and it's not easy like, Ada cloth. In the ways that Ada cloth is easy, there's a little bit of finagling to be done. But anyway, so that you get that done and that's fine, but then you have to cut it out, and you want to cut it out really closely to what you've just couched, so that you don't have excess fabric showing
right.
behind.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to cut it too close, because then you cut the threads that you've just stitched.
Right.
Right. And then you
yeah.
can imagine what happened.
That'll ruin
yeah.
a day. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did that.
Oh, exactly. No. Did you really?
So, and then I kind of looked at one wing and said, yeah, it's not that bad. I can fix it. And then I put them on. I put the wired slips into the piece, and I said, yeah, I can still fix it if I just couch over it. And the more I kind of look, I was like, let me sleep on it, look back on it. And I looked back on it and I said, no, this is not, it's not happening. It's to my eye, too sloppy and so easily fixable. So I'm just going to make another wing and take that wing out and put it in. So that's easy.
Yeah.
So aside from that one little repair that I want to do, the piece is done. So the piece is two poppies and a bunch of daisies and some surface stitched leaves that have some padding. So the piece taught you a bunch of different techniques. There's the wired slips. So those are the petals of the flowers and the bee wings. So you have that raised. You have turkey work, which is the bee body that is also raised. And then there's different ways to pad the surface stitching. So either stitching over felt or stitching over stitches, just using a little bit of underneath stitching to raise something up to give it a little bit of dimension. And then just a couple of different embroidery stitches to learn. So, yeah, it's all done.
One to ten, ten's high. How would you rate your first one?
Graded on what?
I mean, just, you know, your overall feeling about the quality. I mean, your overall feeling. You feel what? Seven, eight? What do you think?
I would give it a middle. I would give it a five.
Okay.
But I don't think it was that difficult a piece. And I'll tell you what things I think went well. I think that certain things weren't as difficult as I thought. So the stitch painting, because this particular piece wasn't that difficult to do, the stitch painting wasn't as difficult as I expected.
Mm-hmm.
And which was perfect, because then that gives the courage to start something that's a lot more complicated.
Right.
So that was good. And it allowed me to sort of work out some of the kinks of just even satin stitching with silks, which I'd never done before. How do you make them lie flat? How do you get the sheen even? You know, simple things like, you know, yeah. making things look beautiful. So things that I look at and say, you know, what could I have done better? What I was doing, because I was learning, was I was sticking to a design, and it was traced onto the fabric. And where there were areas where I traced clumsily, I stitched clumsily. So there are lines on it that now I look at and say, you know, what I would do now is I wouldn't feel obligated to stay true to the design as it was written or drawn. If I was stitching it, I think now I would hold it away from me every once in a while and say, that line would be a lot more graceful if I took it this way.
Mm-hmm.
So I would feel better about deviating from the design slightly, and perhaps it's just my drawing, my, you know, line drawing of the design, just to make sure that the lines are more graceful.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And by no means am I criticizing the design. The design was done well, but there may have been places where I traced it poorly or something like that. So I would like to do that. The other thing that I think I would do differently is, instead of staying true to the design as it is done, so using the design as it's been stitched as the model, I would do that. But then I'm stitching things that are real things, right? Like
right.
poppies are real and bumblebees are real. So in addition to stitching it and making it look like just like the model, I would get, you know, the picture of a bumblebee that's hanging on my wall, who is painted by Karen Talbot, who's a friend of ours, and look at the picture of a real bumblebee. So our friend was a medical illustrator and now is a a wildlife illustrator. So she does true to life, anatomically correct wildlife illustrations. So I'm sitting here looking at this thinking, you know, I have this beautiful reference material, which is an exact drawing of a bumblebee exactly the way it should be. I could have gotten up and looked at that, and use that as a guideline for, you know, where should the stripes sit and how should the legs bend and what little things could I do to enhance something, or how do colors blend differently? So I think I would be more emboldened, I guess, to look to the real things as guidance for the stitchery than I was the first time. But that said, the first time I wanted to stitch it exactly the way it was so that I could learn what to do, right? Because I had no idea.
Right. So, well, yeah, you got to get over the fear factor. You got to get, just see what is it I have to do? And then, all right, now how can I vary from that? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of it is technique, because there's things, you know, you look at things like, you know, these flowers were fading from a light red to a dark red. So that's easy. But the hard part of it was you're stitching a petal that's shaped like a teardrop. So you're changing from light to dark thread, but you're also changing from a wide area to a point. So an area that would be covered with 100 stitches to an area that would be covered by 3. So you're changing the number of stitches, and then you're all changing the angle of the stitches, because they all have to point towards that center. So it took a little bit of practice to figure out how to compensate for that.
Yep.
So you're changing 3 different things at the same time while you're doing the stitch in order to make it look pretty, right?
Right.
So I figured out a couple of ways to make it not pretty. And then once I figured out those ways, I moved on to the ways that make it work well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So now I think that I want to do another piece. I don't know which is going to be the next one, but for me, I think the needle painting part is the most interesting at the moment. Because I'm curious to see whether or not I can do it well.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of where I am right now.
Now that you have a taste of the technique. Yeah. How can I, what can I do with it? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So now I know I can play threads down on silk. So that's okay. Great. That's fine. Can I blend threads? Yes. I can blend threads when they're close in color. Fine. All right, now, can I blend threads, you know, elegantly when they're not close in color?
yeah.
You know, and then can I make something look like, like a real flower, as opposed to, oh, isn't that a nice, you know, drawing of a flower, or, you know, stitched thing that, you know, facsimile of a flower kind of thing.
Yeah. So, can I take a pansy petal from essentially dark blue or black to a very pale blue and have it look natural? Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's fascinating to me.
Yes.
So I'm kind of, that's the next thing that's really interesting.
I just think it's so much fun to learn, you know, it's so much fun to learn that stuff and just go through that mental process and, all right, I want to come back again, take another run at this and do it this way. Oh, That's the fun part. It really is. All right, we gotta quit. Darn it.
We do.
We're out of time. So this is the last show of the year for us. This one. Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, I'll post reruns of some of our earlier shows, and next Wednesday between Christmas and New Year, we'll do a rerun of a midweek show, and then Christine and I will be back on January 3 with a midweek show, and then Lorraine Salt, the first Sunday in January, will be our first guest of the new year. So a little break, but we won't leave you without things to listen to unless you've been listening from day one. Thinking I might take a couple of cross-stitch, maybe a couple of Nicola ones, and put them together. I don't know what I'm going to do.
That might be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll leave you with stuff to listen to, but we're going to take a break. So there we have it, because we're selfish like that.
Terrible.
Yes.
Terrible. And our families are too.
Yeah, the nerve of them. All right, so that's it for the year. Thanks to everybody for listening, getting our first year off to a tremendous start. If you're of the Christian persuasion, Merry Christmas, and otherwise, Happy Holidays and Happy New Year. And yeah, all of that.
Okay, take care and talk to you in the new year.